Laramie resident Mark Jenkins recently returned to Wyoming after climbing Mount Everest. Jenkins is a travel writer for Outside Magazine and a contributor to National Geographic, and he joins us now to discuss his experience. He says Everest expeditions are long, typically 2 months or even longer.
Your body has to acclimatize, so you spend about a week to 10 days getting to base camp. Base camp is at 17,500 feet. And so you actually work your way up the mountain. You'll go up, climb for 3 or 4 days, come back down and rest, go up to the next camp, climb for 3 or 4 days, come back down and rest. So you climb the mountain probably four times in the whole two-month period. And that's why it takes so long. Your body requires about a month of time to acclimatize to 25, 26,000 feet before you use oxygen.
So what do you take with you? What's in your pack?
It's in my pack. Your sleeping bag, usually. I mean, that's what you're carrying in your food for the day. The Sherpas do a lot of work for you, so they're carrying some of the heavier things. Like I carry the tent occasionally, but oftentimes the Sherpas are carrying the food in the tent. And they're part of your team. On our team, they're very close to us. I mean, one of them, Panuru, our Siddhar, who's the head Sherpa, this was his 10th summit climbing Everest. One of them was Danuru. Danuru, this is his 14th ascent of Everest. So you have a close relationship with your Sherpas.
Now, of course, you're doing this not just for fun, but also to write about it. Is that difficult, documenting a process in an environment where it's sort of tough even just to keep going?
Yeah, I was on assignment for National Geographic magazine, and then we're also producing a book about Everest, so I'm writing some of that. But no, it's quite natural for me. I mean, I'm accustomed to sitting in my tent late at night when everybody else has fallen asleep and scribbling away. So I actually enjoy having a writing project. So for me, it wasn't a difficulty. It was an opportunity.
So this is your second attempt at summiting Mount Everest. What happened the last time around that kept you from getting to the top?
The last time was a long time ago. It was 1986. This is before there were any commercial expeditions on Everest. So if you went to Everest, you were already a climber and you were the team of climbers. We were attempting a new route on the north face of Everest, which was quite difficult. It was a dry year, so it was all ice climbing. And by the time we got high enough to push for the summit, the monsoon had come in and we started getting too much snow and avalanches. So it was a combination of not moving quickly enough on the face, and then with the monsoon coming a week earlier than we expected, we didn't get to the top.
And then this time you took a different route up.
This time we were on the standard route, the South Col or Southeast Ridge route. It's the route that most everyone takes, and you have more Sherpa support. You do have to go through the Khumbu Icefall, which is a dangerous part that's on the south side, doesn't exist on the north side. But yeah, we were on an easier route.
How big a role does weather play in sort of dictating whether or not you're going to make it up?
It's everything, basically. I mean, weather determines whether you go to the summit. You have what we call weather windows, and usually that's when the winds drop and the temperatures rise. Because the wind can be so strong, it can blow you off the mountain, and it also causes frostbite. And it can be so cold that I think when we went to the summit, it was 20 below Celsius, so maybe it was 15 below Fahrenheit, and the wind was going 30 to 50 miles an hour. So it was a typical windy winter day in Wyoming is what it was like.
Maybe a little more extreme than that.
A little bit. Yeah, you're at higher elevation. But in terms of the cold, I think it was not unlike a winter day, a nasty day in Wyoming. We get those. We know what they're like.
So what was it like on top?
I mean, crowded. There were probably 30 people on top. It was very cold. My camera actually completely froze. In fact, I'd brought a battery in and carried it next to my chest close so that I'd have a warm battery, and I put it in and the camera itself froze. So I don't have pictures from the summit. Luckily, somebody else's camera was working. Cold and windy, and you don't spend a lot of time there. After spending 2.5 months to get there, you're, 10 minutes or 15 minutes looking out at Tibet, and then you go down.
So on a more somber note, of course, you made it back down in one piece, alive and with all your fingers and toes.
Yes.
Not everyone did.
Not everyone did, and I have to say that in most of the cases that I tried to review, it was pilot error. Everest is not killing that many people. They're killing themselves. They're making serious mistakes on a very serious mountain. And like climbing the Grand Teton or climbing Mount Rainier, most mountains will give you one or two mistakes, but more than that, and you pay a high price.
So, but what are some of these mistakes, I mean, that end up costing people their lives?
Not recognizing that the summit is only halfway, I think it's probably one of the primary mistakes, is that you have to, when you reach the summit, you still have to have enough strength to get back down. And if you don't, I mean, if you were in the middle of the winter and you sat down anywhere in Wyoming, you'd freeze to death. You'd be a popsicle in about an hour. And that's what happens. And you have to be careful about your attitude. You have to recognize that the mountain always has the final say, and you have to be able to be willing to turn around. If the conditions dictate or your body dictates, you have to be able to say, okay, enough. I'll come back another year and the mountain will still be here.
And I can imagine that's hard if you've made it really close to...
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. But I have the most respect for mountaineers who know how to turn around. One of them is Uli Steck, who's a famous Swiss climber, and he's set the record for speed ascents of Eiger and the Grand Jorasse. And he was on Everest last year, and he got to 8,700 meters, which is only 300,000 feet from the summit. His feet were cold. He turned around. He said, it's not worth losing toes or fingers for. And I think that that's a very rational way. The mountain will always be there. You can come back the next year or the year after.
So obviously you do this for a living. You go on adventures and write about them.
That's my job.
And you've gone on a lot of impressive adventures. Sort of how does Everest compare to some of the other things you've done?
Well, first I should say that climbing mountains is a narcissistic endeavor. You're not curing cancer. You're doing something pretty personal. That's fine, but I hesitate to call climbing Everest a noble cause or something like that. I don't really think it is. I think it's a big mountain, and you're doing it largely for personal reasons. There are many other people doing more difficult things all the time, all over the world. So Everest is a self-selection. You choose to suffer. You choose to put a lot of money into climbing a single mountain. If you're a mountaineer, I think it's a big goal, but... In the world itself, it's just a mountain.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
And again, congratulations.
Thank you.
That was Mark Jenkins of Laramie, who just returned from Mount Everest.